Good. So, let's do this.
Okay. Hello, I'm Simon Mercip, and this is Crave, the podcast dedicated to film and music, theatre, television, and anything that's been entertaining Steve McCabe and I lately.
And as it happens, this week, it's not just Simon and me who've got a view or two to share. Now, for the very first time on Crave, and I know you've all been looking forward to this, to have somebody else talking, so just the two of us, we have our very first special guest reviewer.
Be still, my beating heart. Steve, this isn't surprising, given we have people from all over the world knocking at our door, begging for the chance to appear on this podcast.
Begging, pleading. And so finally, the people have spoken. And what can I tell you? We had a very, very rigorous selection process, obviously. And Debbie has emerged as the clear choice, the obvious choice, to tell us about a recent concert in Auckland of a rather famous performer.
Yes, yes, and Debbie is...
My wife.
Yes. A very rigorous selection process.
Oh, you can feel the rigour, can't you?
Yeah. Shall we move on?
Yeah, I think we should. So the performer that Deb's going to be talking to us about is, of course, Prince, or the artist formerly known as Prince, or given that he's now going back to calling himself Prince, he's now actually the artist formerly known as... The artist formerly known as Prince. You can tie yourself in a knot here, so I think we'll just stick with Prince. I've also, incidentally, been to see the Reverend Peyton's Big Damn Band, and we'll be talking about that very shortly.
Goodness.
And I also had a quick chat with the director of Auckland's new pop-up Globe.
Fantastic. And then later, Steve and I will swap notes on a couple of films. Boy, these are contrasting pieces of entertainment. The remake of Dad's Army, that beloved TV series, and the first R-rated superhero movie called Deadpool.
And one of those two was brilliant.
Let's keep our listeners guessing.
Oh, yes. You can tell they're on the edge of the seats already, you can tell. But let's start with a rare concert event in Auckland. So rare, in fact, I believe it's the first time ever that Prince has played here. So to make up for lost time, he put on not one, but two shows in the same evening. And as I said, my wife Debbie went to see Prince on our behalf. And seeing as she and I have already had an extensive chat about this in the car on the way home, she couldn't stop raving about it. It's time for you and her to have a quick chat, Simon. So here's Debbie.
Debbie, hi. Welcome to the Crave podcast.
Thanks, Simon. Good to be here.
Good, good. So first of all, let's deal with some basics. What was the venue and which of the two shows did you see?
Well, the venue was the Aotea Centre in Auckland, and I saw the first of the two at 6:30.
Okay, and give it to us straight, Debbie. Did you enjoy it?
I absolutely loved it. I felt like it was a spiritual experience, Simon.
Whoa, that's not holding back on the praise. Did you go into this being someone who was already a big fan of Prince and familiar with his work?
Yes, I am definitely familiar with his work, and I'm definitely a fan. I had kind of lost track of Prince, really, for a long time. So I knew a lot of the classics, but wasn't really aware of what he's been doing lately.
Okay. And so just give us a bit of a sense of how he approached this show, because some artists, when they know that there are big hits that the fans want to hear, they'll play them just as the fans remember them, and at other times they'll just reinterpret them completely. How did he do this?
Well, I think that is a really important question. I have to admit to being a little bit apprehensive about seeing Prince. A couple of years ago, I saw the Rolling Stones, and as Steve said, they were their own tribute band, and I was a little bit afraid of that happening, seeing, you know, a performer who's been around for a while. But I was not disappointed with Prince at all. I felt like he reinterpreted everything that he played. He did play classics, Little Red Corvette, Raspberry Beret, things like that, Purple Rain, but they sounded so different, so fresh, so different to me.
Fantastic, fantastic. What was he like on stage, Debbie? I mean, is he chatty, or is he just kind of keep to himself? What?
I wouldn't call him chatty, but it felt like I was one of the only people in the room. I felt like he interacted with the audience in a way that wasn't chatty. I don't know if that makes sense. He did talk to the audience. He did interact with us, but it wasn't in the kind of way that you see with other performers where they say, oh, Auckland, it's, you know, you're the best audience ever. He didn't do any of that. I can't even remember really honestly what he said, but I felt a connection. Let's just say that.
Yeah, well, that's the most important thing. Hey, and what about, as Steve said, this was one of two shows he did in one night.
Yes.
Did you get any sense? I mean, it's a question that arises, doesn't it, whether an artist would just be holding back a little bit in that first show, knowing he's got to do it again a few hours later?
No, he did not hold back. In fact, at one point, I was kind of worried about the poor people at the 10 o'clock show. What were they going to get? What did he have left?
Right.
He did leave the stage about an hour into the show, I think. And the other thing about the show is he left the stage, and I thought to myself, how long has it been? It felt like it had been maybe 10 or 15 minutes. So I did actually look at my watch, which I tend never to do in concerts because I don't want to, you know, suspend that disbelief kind of thing. And it had only been an hour. And I thought, you know, could he be coming back? What's happening? And he was only off for a couple of minutes. I'm not sure what that was about. Not even a couple of minutes. Maybe it was only a minute. So, yeah, he okay. gave it his all. He did.
Fantastic. What was his band like?
It was just Prince, his piano, and a microphone.
Uh-huh. Silly question on my part then. Is that right? Wow. Just him and a okay, so that's actually to do two of those sorts of shows in a night, that's really special.
I think so, yeah. And like I said, he really did give it his all. He put so much into the performance. He did not sit still. He, at one point, he played this one rhythm, and he kept playing it. It wasn't repetition to me. It just felt like he was really putting everything into it. And he said, just bear with me while I get this out of my system. And everyone just cheered. Everyone loved it. It was amazing.
Oh, fantastic. One thing I must ask you, because I remember some of the media coverage beforehand, Debbie, was comment about how he really insisted on pretty tight security. He didn't want cameras, not even smartphones, which you see so often at concerts these days.
Yeah.
Did the audience do as they were told?
They absolutely did. There were people making sure of that. I had my iPhone with me. I don't carry bags into concerts. I like to travel really light. So I usually have my iPhone in my hand. And I was told that I needed to put it away, even though it was off. I was actually told that I had to turn it off. There was no texting. It wasn't just no cameras and no videos. There was no texting, no turning on of your phone at all. And part of me was really glad about that because I really enjoyed the concert that way. And I haven't done that for years. I always have my phone out. And part of me was I felt a little sad about it. I thought there's no record of this at all, except for inside of me.
Yeah, yeah. Well, maybe that's where it should be.
I think
that's really nice.
Yeah, I think so.
So I feel like I really don't need to ask this question, but I gather you would recommend that if he comes back, Steve and I should get some tickets.
Absolutely.
Fantastic. Hey, Debbie, thank you so much. We look forward to having you back on Crave again. That was fantastic.
Okay, thank you, Simon.
Stuff. And you are listening to the Crave podcast, where Steve McCabe and me, Simon Mercip, and our guests, of course, we chat about everything to do with entertainment. Steve, shall we stay with music?
Let's stay with music, and we'll go to another show that seems like it should be at the other end of the spectrum, but I would suggest was close to being as entertaining. I bet you've never heard of Reverend Peyton's Big Damn Band, have you?
That's a good bet. The only thing I would say about anything with the word reverend in it, it makes me think, I don't know, are we talking about soul or blues music? That's the only hint I could get from that.
Well, to be honest, I don't actually think he's a real reverend, to be fair.
No, really?
I know, it's a shocker, isn't he? I know, you're stunned and disappointed. It was always hard to describe, really, to be honest. There was rockabilly, country, rock, blues, you name it. There's all manner of everything jammed in together. You've got a bloke from Indiana in a pair of bib overalls and the most spectacular beard you've ever seen, playing a number of guitars, including one that was actually a cigar box with a length of wood and three strings on it, playing slide guitar like you've never heard.
Right.
So that would be the Reverend.
Yes.
You've got his wife, Breezy, playing washboard.
Wow.
Yeah, and nothing else. And a drummer who's front drum, directly above his kick drum, was an upside-down painting.
Excellent.
So there's a bit of shtick going on.
Yeah.
But it was as enjoyable a show as I've been to in a very long time. It was the Tuning Fork in Auckland, which is increasingly becoming one of my favourite venues. It's great to find really obscure bands who just put on phenomenal shows in a really small venue. I love the place. And
sorry, just to interrupt, just for those of us who are not familiar with it, where is the Tuning Fork?
The Tuning Fork. Auckland. It's a great name for the place, really. It's basically the bar next door to the Vector Arena.
Oh, I see. Right. Okay.
Hence the name. And they have a stage at the end of the place, and so every now and then they put on shows. And last night's was quite remarkable. It was an hour and a half of very, very high-energy country rock and blues. Very entertaining, very bizarre stuff. The guy's got more energy as a performer than anyone I've seen. You know, Deb's talking about Prince sitting at a piano. This guy couldn't stand still if you paid him. Big bloke with a huge booming voice. He reminded me basically of a country and western Brian Blessed.
Oh, no, there's an image.
That'll stick with you, won't it? Yeah, it was absolutely fantastic. Now, apparently, they're playing Hamilton tomorrow night. Now, here's how good they are. I'd even recommend going to Hamilton to see them.
Wow, that's strong recommendation. Okay.
I know, it's a drastic move, isn't it?
Yeah, well, there's a few good things to happen in Hamilton. More than a few. Okay, fantastic. Really good. Hey, so, I'd never heard of them before. Just one. I mean, are these guys been around a long time? Had you heard of them before you saw them that night?
Oddly enough, no, I hadn't. I was looking through the listings at the Tuning Fork and I saw the name of the band and I thought, the Reverend Peyton's Big Damn Band. How can you not want to see that?
Yeah.
And so I looked them up on YouTube and I found a song called Clap Your Hands. The video is bizarre. It's the three of them playing in a barn with everyone from breakdancers to Tai Chi experts in the audience. The video has to be seen to be believed. It's beautiful. And that I thought, I have to see them. And so off we went last night. It was superb. We'll have some photos from the show up on the website this afternoon as well.
This is Craig, and by the way, Steve and I will get around to talking about movies. We usually start with film, but we just wanted to hear about the live performances first. We'll be talking about Deadpool and Dad's Army later. But Steve, should we stay with the live performance and live theatre?
Yes, we could do. Nice segue, Simon. Well done.
Look, you don't pay me the big bucks for nothing, Steve.
Are you getting paid for this?
Nothing.
I was going to say, there's something not right here, mate, because it's the first I've heard of this.
Now, it's not just any theatre we're talking about either.
Now, we're being classy. We're being really, really classy. I've been to the Globe, don't you know?
Yes, rather.
Yes. This would be the pop-up Globe that's just, popped up.
No.
That's what pop-up things do, isn't it? Yeah. The pop-up Globe has popped up in Auckland to commemorate, of all things, the 400th anniversary of the death of a gentleman you may have heard of by the name of William Shakespeare.
And you know, I did not have that in my diary. Damn.
I know. Well, I mean, I don't know about you. He never writes to me anymore. Never calls, not an email or anything. So it's hardly any great surprise. But they're commemorating the 400th anniversary of his death. So they've, now we're going to have to edit this very, very carefully because I'm suddenly realizing I have my notes in front of me. I can't remember the name of the bloke in question. So as I Google this, this is all going to get edited out, probably.
Yes.
Hang on, where are we looking? About us on the website.
Maybe we shouldn't edit it out.
We shall see. We shall
I'll
see.
Leave it to you.
Warts and all.
Yes. Anyway, it's fine.
No, it's the surname of the director whose name I can't for the life of me remember. Where are we looking? Not Miles Gray. Not Ben Taylor. Not Jessica. Tobias Grant, that's the chap I was speaking to. Thank you. I interviewed the bloke for us last week. I can't believe I've forgotten his surname. That's shameful. I went along to the media preview last week of the pop-up Globe, and the name sums up what the thing is quite nicely. They have built, and it's taken them about 2 months to build, an almost exact replica of Shakespeare's Globe Theatre. And they built this in a car park in Auckland, just by the Civic Centre.
Yes, I've seen it. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, hard to miss, yeah. Isn't it?
Yes, yeah, yeah. It's it does evoke a globish feel.
It does, and inside, absolutely, you can smell the sawdust. It's just been built. It's deliberately rough and ready on the inside. You can see scaffolding and you can see raw wood. It's intended to be a transient thing. And in a couple of months, it's all going to get pulled down again.
Hence pop-up.
But part of its charm is that nakedness to it. It's brilliant. And so I had the great good fortune to go and see, as I said, the press preview. They did us a quick preview of the first scene of Twelfth Night.
Okay.
It's going to be brilliant. One of the fantastic things is, because the original globe had no amplification, no PA, no any of that nonsense that we've come to expect these days, everything is done authentically. The actors are projecting as they would have had to do in the original theatre. So you've got very powerful, very, very well-voiced, very richly voiced performances.
Mm.
And if you're going to go, and I do recommend that you look into going, make sure you get a seat, because if you're standing,
yes.
Well, if you get lucky, you'll be able to stand and lean on the stage. They'll be perfectly happy with you propping your elbows up on the stage, but you better hope it's not raining.
Ah, okay. Explain.
Well, you said it was like the original globe.
Yeah.
The groundlings didn't have cover.
Ah, right.
Because the whole thing was lit by natural light.
Okay. So you had to have some open sky above you.
Absolutely. So the sense it's a donut, essentially. And the cheap seats are covered, but the groundlings are all standing. It's standing room only, and you're exposed,
so to speak. Yes. okay. So tell me about this chat with the director, Tobias.
Well, I'll let him tell you. We are recording. So I'm going to ask you, why Auckland?
Mars and I are both Aucklanders.
Fair enough.
We're friends for many, many years. And Auckland is a wonderful, wonderful place to make something like this happen. And the reason why is it's our hometown.
Okay.
And also is a tremendous can-do approach, which is quite unique to Auckland. Yeah. To make this happen, it's much more than any work that we or our immediate company have done.
Right.
It's about our neighbours, it's about our partners, it's about our sponsors, and it's about that wonderful thing in Auckland where you're only ever about two phone calls away from the people that you need to help you.
Right.
We've got huge support to make this happen, and it's because of all of our partners that we've been able to make it happen at all and to make it happen so quickly. So that's why Auckland.
Tell me about those partners. Who's working with you?
So we have our... ATEED has been an instrumental partner in the mix. So they've supported us in facilitation of finding a site and in terms of all of the consenting and the necessary planning around actually physically erecting a theatre which is capable of hosting 900 people.
Yes, there must have been a fair bit of permitting and...
There's an enormous amount of work, and it would be extremely difficult without such tremendous support to make that happen. Camel Space is our build partner.
Right.
We've been working with them for a year. They've interpreted and worked very closely with Dr. Tim Fitzpatrick, upon whose research this building is designed.
Yeah.
They have interpreted that into the CAD drawings, the plans, and the construction of the entire site. There's a host of wonderful sponsors. Anthony Harper, the law firm of the 150 Degree Pedigree, is the Auckland partner, the partner to the Auckland Season, APN Outdoor, Church Road, who have built a magnificent bar out just immediately behind the theatre in what is a beautiful garden bar, actually, in a glade here right in the middle in the heart of the city, and also Event Finder, our ticketing partner, who's been on board right from the start. It's with all of the support of those teams, plus our cast, our company, and many others besides, that we've been able to bring this to life.
Now, you're advertising this, I think, is it the largest Shakespeare festival ever held in the Southern Hemisphere?
We believe it is, yes.
How did you choose the plays that you're going to be putting on?
We selected Twelfth Night and Romeo and Juliet, because we want popular theatre.
Yeah, they're the obvious ones.
They're the obvious ones.
Yeah, but then Titus Andronicus.
We're looking forward to welcoming six visiting companies into the pop-up globe.
Yeah.
And those six companies, we were inundated with, when we announced what we were doing, we were inundated with companies wanting to be part of it.
Oh, so they came to you and said, we want a part of it?
Yes.
Fantastic.
Absolutely. Which is part of the enormous support we had from various communities. The theatre and creative community has been a very, very large supporter of ours right the way from when we announced it. So those shows are the shows that the six visiting companies have wanted to perform, and we're delighted to welcome them in to perform on the stage.
Okay, that makes sense. So, Tell me about the stage. I mean, it's very, very rough and ready. It's very naked. Was that a conscious choice?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's deliberately a pop-up.
Right.
So a full, complete, permanent building would cost many, many millions. It would be...
impossible.
It would be impossible.
Yeah.
So we have embraced the temporary nature. This is called pop-up blow because we embrace its temporary nature.
Right.
There's a beauty in the rawness of the hundred tons of steel, which are the scaffolding in the structure. The design of the building is beautiful.
Mm.
And I can say that with great modesty because Shakespeare did it and his company did it. And it's a beautiful, beautifully designed building, and it's a wonderful space to be in. And that's the most important thing. It's a beautiful space and a wonderful space in which to enjoy theatre. Right. And the fact that you're surrounded by steel and gratings just adds to the atmosphere of the unique temporary nature of it.
Now, obviously, you did very consciously try to imitate the original Globe, of course. Were there any challenges you faced, any compromises you had to make, or do you feel this is a real, authentic imitation of the original? So imitation is an unfair word. Reproduction, I think, is probably fair, isn't it?
We've sought to be as authentic as we possibly can, and the authenticity is not in material.
Right.
It's in the authenticity of the experience here. And, of course, we weren't at the original Second Globe 400 years ago, so can't claim that it's exactly the same. But working as closely as we have been with Dr. Tim Fitzpatrick and his team and with the various different stakeholders and experts in the field, we believe we've created as authentically as possible the physical space for the performance, and that's what we've sought to authentically bring to life.
Yeah.
It means that the acting and the performance on stage will be as close as it possibly can be to what would have been on stage with Shakespeare's own company, because of course our company is interpreting Shakespeare's work in the space for which it was originally written and in which it was originally performed.
Yeah, because I know there has been a trend recently toward modern interpretations and modern settings in Shakespeare. You completely dialing that back, aren't you, and going back to basics?
Absolutely.
It's going to be fantastic. Mm. So you're going to be running this for 10 weeks, and at the end of 10 weeks, all this fantastic structure, it's going to get torn down, isn't it?
It is.
How are you going to feel then?
Hopefully, we'll be overjoyed.
Okay.
We'll have... we already have in excess of 35,000 tickets sold for this. We have almost 20,000 school children who are being welcomed into matinee performances throughout the course of the season.
Okay.
Ticket sales are at a great pace and are increasing. And our objective is to be able to share this great and unique thing with as many people as possible. So hopefully at the end of 10 weeks that our audience will be delighted at having experienced something that's completely unique. We will have been tremendously honoured to be able to welcome them into the space and deliver that unique experience and we'll all be the better off for it.
Well, it certainly has a look at being something quite special and unique, doesn't it?
It's one of those projects which has caught the attention of many, many people.
For good
reason. And it has huge support and great enthusiasm from many, many, many different groups of people. It's hugely gratifying. It's a very special thing to be part of, and we're just delighted to be able to open it today.
Excellent. Well, thanks very much.
See, thank you so much. Thanks.
So that was Tobias Grant. He's the executive producer of the Pop-Up Globe in Auckland. And as you can tell, he's really excited about this project. It's looking like it's going to be brilliant. Twelfth Night is being done very, very faithfully. Even the women's parts are being played by blokes, just to be authentic. It's going to be quite remarkable.
Good stuff.
Oh, yes.
You're listening. Fantastic. So this is Crave, the podcast, an entertainment podcast with me, Simon Mercier, and Steve McCabe. We usually start with movies, but with all the live performances we wanted to discuss, we've left the movies till last, but not least. Steve, shall we start with a British film, first of all? This is a remake of, well, certainly in this country, it was one of the most beloved British TV comedies of the 70s.
Oh, yes, very definitely.
Dad's Army.
Yeah.
I think it was really one of the archetypal British TV comedies of its time, Steve, and I think, I'm sure... a hard act to follow.
Well, did they pull it off?
No. A really good attempt, but no.
Are we giving marks for effort?
Yes. I think I would give marks for effort. It's just that because I have such warm, fuzzy memories of the original TV series, it's impossible to watch this film and not be making mental calculations all the time. This character, how does he compare to the original? How does that character, compare to the original? And generally speaking, my warm, fuzzy memories of the first cast won out. You know, there were still some great shows and performances here. I thought Michael Gambon was very good as Godfrey, for example.
Well, he really was Godfrey, wasn't he?
Yeah, excellent. The Toby Jones took on the big task of playing Captain Mannering, and I thought he tackled it well. But I actually went back and watched a little bit of the TV series, Steve, and I thought, yeah, Arthur Lowe just embodied the pomposity of that character so well.
Yeah.
It was very difficult for...
I felt that Toby Jones almost played him as being slightly drunk. It was certainly rather bumbling.
Yeah, that's true. More bumbling than pompous.
Yeah.
I agree with that.
And I think your word pomposity sums the original character up quite beautifully. I think that was lacking.
Yeah, I think it was. And probably the biggest disappointment, and no disrespect to a good actor, but Michael Courtney's Jones.
You mean Tom Courtney?
Sorry, did I say Michael?
You did indeed.
Can't get good research these days.
Well, as you said, no disrespect meant to a great actor.
I'm going to get his name right. Tom Courtney, he was a good actor.
Sir Tom Courtney.
Tom Courtney.
Yeah, you're really doing the guy no... I mean, he wasn't... I know he wasn't brilliant, but seriously.
I was disappointed in his Jones. I was.
Yeah. I mean, to what extent do you think they were trying to play a character? And to what extent were they imitating originals, do you think?
Well, given that this film was presented very much as an extended TV series, if you remember the TV series, they went down to the detail of, in the closing credits, having "you have been watching"
yes.
as they did. So really, they weren't trying to distance themselves from the TV series at all in that regard. So the invitation to make the comparison was absolutely there in front of you. So I... And it may be that with time, you know, your memories, it becomes a little more rosy tinted than it should be. But I just did felt like I didn't not enjoy it completely. There were some funny moments. It was a little bit contrived. I thought the ending was a bit too Hollywoodish for me, a little bit too much. I couldn't imagine them such a big shootout happening in the TV series. But just kind of wondered, well, why was this done? I'm not quite sure if I know the answer.
No, it felt to me like they had an astonishing cast. I mean, Bill Nye as Sergeant Wilson was a joy.
Yep.
Blake Harrison as Pike, when he was being Pike and not being something that I didn't recognise, I thought was lovely. But if you remember, the joy of the original series was essentially, it was in some ways, it was a husband and wife story about Wilson and Mannering.
Yeah, I think that's a good way of putting it, yes.
With a fantastic ensemble supporting them. Think back to the film. How often did you see Mannering and Wilson on screen together?
Yeah, not a lot.
Not right. Enough.
Yeah.
I thought that Bill Patterson's Private Fraser, and I am a huge fan of Bill Patterson, I could listen to that man all day. He managed to get the "we're doomed" catchphrasing, because they did shoehorn in all the catchphrases.
They did.
They worked them all in. They teased one or two of them, to be fair, but they get them all in. But I thought he played Private Fraser far too upbeat.
Yes, I agree. Yes.
I thought that was very, very odd. I could say, I think Private Pike ends up as a character that I didn't even recognise.
No.
That was very odd. And what do we make of Catherine Zeta-Jones?
Well... well, I mean, it was appropriate for what they were trying to do, I suppose. I mean, it was pretty obvious what her character was all about. And I won't give that away. But
to be fair, 5 minutes into the film, if you've not figured out what the character's about, then you're really not paying attention.
No, you're not. Well, I mean, the story requires a glamorous thing. Woman to play this role, and she did that well. It was a little overacted, I thought, but hey, maybe that was in keeping with what the style of story. One thing, I just want to come back to one thing real quickly, Steve, because you talked about the essence of the film as being that it's almost a husband and wife relationship between Mannering and Wilson.
Yep.
For me, as a non-British person, I think back on that TV series as really... explaining to me that British thing of, on one hand, not wanting to stand up too tall and blow your own trumpet, very un-American in that sense, but also when the chips were down, the stiff upper lip and the spine showed through, and the Brits when all said and done, they pull through, and that kind of sense of it in an understated British way. That's what I in adversity as the Second World War was. That's what I kind of.
I'd say that's a fair reading. Yeah, I'd go with
permeated. That's for me that original TV series. Whereas this film, I tried to get there, but it was a little bit too. What's the word? A little bit too staged and contrived for me.
Yeah. In the end, all I could think was they took an amazing cast, a phenomenal cast, who were up for the task, and they were given nothing to do. It felt in the end like a weaker episode of the original series stretched out to a full film, and in stretching it, they kind of broke it.
I agree with that. And I think to make the story work, they had to use a lot of the Catherine Zeta-Jones character.
Yeah.
In so doing, you had less time with the other characters you wanted to spend more time with.
And that, in the end, is the bottom line, is you wanted to see these characters doing their Wilson and Mannering bit. You wanted to see Corporal Jones, who was shamefully underused. I mean, you say Sir Tom Courtney was a disappointment. I just think he wasn't given enough to do.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe they should have called him Michael. All right.
Did you spot, incidentally, one of the beautiful, I don't think you can call it a cameo, it was quite obvious, Brigadier Pritchard was played by?
Ian Lavender.
Who was?
The original Pike.
Correct.
Yes.
Yes.
Hurrah.
I was really hoping you wouldn't have got that, so I could then very dismissively have said, stupid boy. And you stole it from me.
Oh, I'm sorry.
They don't like it.
Never mind. Anyway, so I wouldn't. I'm speaking rather negatively, and I want to like it because I liked the TV series so much, and I wouldn't flat out say you must not buy a ticket, because I think there is a curiosity factor that at play. Oh, they've remade out Dad's Army. I wonder what it's like. You know.
Yeah.
And I think that will draw some people to it. I think if you set your expectations medium to low, you might enjoy it more.
Yeah, I'd say save your money and buy the original series on iTunes.
Who do you think you are kidding, Mr. Hitler, if you think we're on the run? We are the boys who will stop your little game. We are the boys who will make you think again. 'Cause who do you think you are kidding, Mr. Hitler, if you think old England's done? Mr. Brown goes off.
Right, this is Crave. We've got one more film to talk about. A film which is at the other end of a spectrum.
You mean good?
Yes. Yes, go on then.
Being a bit bitchy, but to be fair, I came out of Dad's Army disappointed. But then the following week, when Debbie was seeing Prince, she could only get one ticket. Being the gallant gentleman and the loving husband that I am, I let her take it. And instead, I went next door to the cinema and I saw Deadpool.
And did you laugh?
Didn't stop. Actually, that's not true. I did stop briefly, but yes.
We're talking about Deadpool. Yes, it's, I think, the first R-rated superhero movie. I'm pretty sure that's right.
Just to clarify, since we're not actually Americans, it's M16 rated.
Oh, okay. Righto. Fair enough.
Yeah, I'm sorry. This is New Zealand, Simon.
Yes, it is.
I, of all people, should not have to point that out to you.
No, you're quite right. So Deadpool, in case you don't know, is a Marvel Comics superhero. He has the tagline, the Merc with the Mouth. And I'm not familiar with the comic book character, but I've been told by those who are that this film faithfully presents a foul-mouthed, violence-loving, smart-ass, booty-shaking character, which I guess, Steve, is just your cup of tea.
Well, obviously they modelled it on me. It's it's genuinely funny, isn't it?
I laughed out loud a lot.
Yes.
I mean, I really did. I was laughing a lot right through most of the film. I think I actually enjoyed the humour more than the superhero fight scenes.
Oh, they were just to drive the story. They were incidental. It was about the humour.
Yeah, it was. And when we took the humour of it is, I mean, there's been so many superhero movies now, the plot almost doesn't really matter. But the really interesting thing about the humour of this film is that it's poking fun at its own genre all the time, right through, from the very opening credits, which are very clever, right through to the end, even though the film itself sits inside that genre. I mean, it is a superhero movie, and it's poking fun at superhero movies, and it uses other Marvel characters. So I guess really you could say that it could have fallen flat, but it didn't. I think the lead actor, Ryan Reynolds, panache and his flair and a very smart script carry the day.
Absolutely. I mean, there was notionally a story. It's the origins story of the character Deadpool. And I'm with you. I wasn't overly familiar before I went in to see it. I had no idea where the name Deadpool came from. And obviously there's a nice little backstory that explains it's part of his origin. And I thought that the weakest part of the film was the backstory narrative when that was going on. But so much foul, revolting humour. The nothing sacred.
No.
Lots of blind woman gags. lots of highly sexual humour.
Yes.
Lots of lavatory humour.
Yes.
It's crude. And it does it pokes fun at the genre. There's one wonderful scene as he's becoming Deadpool, where he's trying to settle on his costume, and we see him sitting in his apartment stitching his own costumes at a sewing machine.
Yes, that's right.
It's gloriously bizarre humour. He constantly is breaking the fourth wall,
yeah,
and drawing attention to the fact that he's doing it.
Yes, yes, yes.
There's one wonderful moment where he is narrating a flashback knowingly. He's very knowing. The whole thing is very arch and very knowing. But he breaks the fourth wall to set up a flashback, and then in the flashback breaks the fourth wall again and draws attention to this and says, "I'm breaking the fourth wall while breaking the fourth wall." That's like 16 walls.
Yes. Yeah.
And I was thinking, to be honest, when the film started, I thought there's no way in the world they can sustain the momentum for this.
Yeah.
It's going to fizzle out after 15 or 20 minutes, and then it's just going to go slack. And astonishingly, I don't think it did.
I don't think it did, no. I think that's, the fight scenes almost are too expected. But one of the things is the obvious enthusiasm of Ryan Reynolds for the character.
Oh, yes.
And apparently he spent several years lobbying for this Deadpool character to be given his own film, because he did appear briefly in another Marvel film some years back, in one of the Wolverine films, and there's some references to Wolverine and Hugh Jackman peppered through the film. That works really well. I'm with you. I think the blood and the bad language and a bit of nudity, a bit of sex, it just kind of, in a way, it made it a little more real. It made some of the other sort of films like this appear too...
sanitized.
Sanitized, that's the word I'm looking at. Yeah, too sanitized. This is like how it might really be.
Yeah, there was actual blood. I mean, at one point, if you remember earlier on in the first big sequence, do you remember where he got his costume ripped?
Yeah.
Yes, I believe the phrase he uses, "ouch, straight up Main Street." We'll let the audience figure out what that might refer to.
Yes, that's right.
It's genuinely funny, isn't it?
It is. It is funny. It's more a comedy than anything else, really, and it works really, really well. And I wonder, because there's, they're churning out these superhero movies like there's no tomorrow, Steve. And this has been, I think, extremely successful commercially in its first few weeks of release. It's over $500 million around the world. So it makes you wonder whether the producers will think, oh, this might work. We might just should do a bit more of this.
I know. And the danger is that once they start doing that, once they start dissecting what worked in it, then they're going to kill it. I hope they don't do that.
I hope so. Yeah. I'm with you. Anyway, I would definitely recommend you buy a ticket for this.
Oh, me too. In fact, I'm tempted to buy another one and go and see it again. It was that good.
wonderful. Well, I think we've had, as the two Ronnies used to say, Steve, a packed program.
Absolutely. I mean, there's been a lot going on this week, and there's plenty more coming up very shortly. Film releases are going to be big this coming week.
Yes.
I have sitting on my desk in front of me my press invite for Hail Caesar, and this is going to be brilliant.
This is with George Clooney and Scarlett Johansson and other luminaries.
Oh, let's see. It's Josh Brolin, Ralph Fiennes, Jonah Hill, Frances McDormand, Tilda Swinton, Channing Tatum. I mean, seriously, I mean, I'm surprised you and I aren't in it. Everybody's in this film. It's and most importantly, it's the new Coen brothers.
Yeah, yeah. And that's worth having a look at for sure.
Well, that's opening on the 3rd of March, so it's being previewed next week. Crave will definitely be there.
Mm-hmm.
The other big release the following week is 10 Cloverfield Lane, which is looking like an interesting psychological thriller.
Yes, I've seen the trailer for that, which works quite well. It all depends on whether the big reveal is as interesting and surprising as we hope it will be.
Well, they're obviously trying to tell us that it will be. We'll
we'll let you know.
We'll have a full and detailed spoiler-free review for that one this time next week. In the world of music, the big event actually is this evening at the Auckland Zoo.
Right.
We've got a show called Hear Them Roar. Sharon O'Neill, Margaret Ulrich, we've got Debbie Harwood, Annie Crummer, Shona Lang playing together at the Auckland Zoo. And the whole thing's being compared by Michelle Acourt.
Wow. That's a great sounding show.
It's going to be fun. So
you've got a spare ticket for that.
I might be able to rustle one up for you, mate.
Whoa.
See what I can do for you.
Okay. Thanks. Thanks very much. Yeah. And just quickly, very quickly, we are recording this, Steve, almost virtually on the eve of the Oscars.
Yes.
I think the film I liked a lot, The Revenant, is probably going to do very well.
Yes. Yeah, you're probably right. It'll win because it's worthy, because Leonardo suffered. Look, I suffered for that film. I'm going to get a bloody Oscar for it.
Oh, well, I won't begrudge him if he gets it. I won't begrudge him.
Okay, well, you know what? You've gone there, so let's do this. Revenant for Best Picture this year?
Yes.
Okay, fair enough. We can go with that. Mm. I finally got around to seeing Bridge of Spies.
Oh, did you?
Yes, I did.
Did you enjoy it?
I thought it was utterly fantastic.
Yeah, I enjoyed it very much. Oh, good.
I'm going to call that one. That's my prediction.
Okay.
For best film.
Wow. Now,
You're not convinced. You're going with The Revenant, aren't you?
I think so, but that's interesting. That's it. Okay, best director?
Iñárritu's going to get it. I know he is.
Yeah, I think he will.
For The Revenant. One that I didn't get chance to see and I'd love to have seen was Room.
Yeah, likewise. I heard that was very, very good.
Heard wonderful things about that. Going back to Best Picture for a second, I'd love to see The Martian get it. I have a lot of affection for that film. I don't think it'll pull it off, but I did enjoy it.
Yes, true. Yep.
Best actor?
Well, I think it will be DiCaprio. I think so. Yes, I think it will be him.
Yeah, for all the wrong reasons.
Well, maybe. That often happens in Oscars, doesn't it?
Well, as people are saying, he's going to win the Oscar, but it won't be for The Revenant.
Yeah, no. That won't be the first time that's happened.
No. I'd like to see Michael Fassbender get it for Steve Jobs, personally.
Okay. Yes, though, you really like that.
I was very impressed.
Now, best actress. Who's up for best actress this year?
We've got Kate Blanchett for Carol.
Yeah.
Brie Larson for Room.
Right.
Jennifer Lawrence for Joy.
Right.
Charlotte Rampling for 45 Years. And Saoirse Ronan for Brooklyn. And this one's a real toughie for Kiwis.
Yeah. Why is it particularly tough for Kiwis?
Because most of these films haven't opened in New Zealand yet.
No, I was going to shamefacedly say I haven't actually seen many of these films.
No, and that's no reflection on you, Simon.
Yeah, I know that Carol's been generally lauded to the rafters.
Yes, I'm looking forward to seeing it.
So it may well be that Kate Blanchett will bring home the bacon, if that's that may be a poor metaphor to use. But
we'll take it.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. Well, we'll see. We can sum up next time we chat.
Yeah. Well, very quickly, just say best supporting actor has to be Mark Rylance.
Ah, for Bridge of Spies.
Oh, yes.
He was very good. Very, very good. Yes, I
thought he was fantastic in that.
I'd support that.
Excellent. I think we've got one we're agreeing on.
Good.
Yeah. So are we nipping down the TAB when this is over and putting a quick accumulator on?
Yeah, we should. Yes, we could cover the film. What about best supporting actress, just quickly? Because
best supporting actress. Jennifer Jason Leigh for The Hateful Eight, Rooney Mara in Carol, Rachel McAdams in Spotlight, Alicia Vikander in The Danish Girl, and Kate Winslet in Steve Jobs.
Ooh, well, I don't think it'll be Jennifer Jason Leigh for The Hateful Eight. I don't think so.
No, but I did like her in it.
Yeah, she was good, but I'm not sure about that one.
It's not Oscar material, is it?
Probably not.
No, it should be Kate Winslet.
Okay, we'll see. We'll see.
But it will be Alicia Vikander.
Okay, thank you for that prediction.
Yeah.
Well, I think we've done our what's the expression? We've done our chips.
I think we've bored each other senseless for now. Yeah, I think I think we've got there definitely.
Right. So this has been brought to you with great style and panache, Crave, and we will be back with you very soon with some more music and film and theatre. You can email us, by the way. We'd be very pleased to hear from you. The email address is podcast@cravepodcast.com.
We're on Facebook, like all the cool kids are, and you can follow us on Twitter @CravePodcast.
So, I'm Simon Mercer.
I'm Steve McCabe.
That's what's been entertaining us this week.